There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to my good bad brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. I'm still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person even really is, but I figured out a long time ago that being alive is beautiful.
Hey, alright, I'm not gonna get too, you know, talky-walky about this, because I'm dropping a bunch of the episodes in one day. You're gonna hear the same thing over and over again if you're catching up, you know, whatever. This live stream was a few weeks ago, and the notes I wrote for it were just, I got emotional. Which is funny, I guess, that's the only really note I wrote down about it. Basically, we got in some discussion, ultimately. This is at least the most pertinent thing in the episode, or I think I would preamble and introduce it about getting help, you know, to struggle to get help, and when it's time to get help. And I basically end up talking about some of my experiences going and getting help. Someone wrote a question in that, you know, we were really going through it, really deep in it. And I guess that just brought up some old stuff for me and a bunch of folks in the chat. And I don't know, one of the beautiful things that came out of it, especially too, you know, as we're talking about things, a couple people in the chat were right away like, hey, if you need someone to talk to, here, I will do it. Call me, text me, whatever you want. Email me. Few people. And so I don't know, that was just very special, you know. I guess I don't know, I don't talk about that much, but I mean, I do talk about it a lot. I don't know, this is like invisible community of good bad brain, you know, that I don't know, the message that I get, or you know, a variation on this message is what I get the most often, I suppose, when people decide to reach out, is just that it's validating, you know, that it's like reassuring to hear other people as open or be open rather about what they're going through and not being perfect and not feeling sane all the time and trying their best, you know, and this little mini community that validates each other and finds solidarity in each other is really real. And if there's one thing that the quarantine stuff and then just doing this pod live and people showing up for it more that it's really driven home is that this little community exists, you know, and they want to be there for each other. So I think that's amazing. That's it. I'm not going to introduce it too hard. Just let the thing roll now. And, yeah, thank you guys so much. See us Sunday if you want to come join for the live stream version of it. 10 a.m. Pacific on Sundays at youtube.com/jsleeper. We stream, Nick and I chatting, and we'll answer questions from folks in the chat. Or if you want to email at mygoodbadbrain@gmail.com, you can do that too. You can also support the pod if you want at patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain or mygoodbadbrain.com. You can go there and buy shirts and stuff. All right, that's it. Thank you so much. I hope you guys enjoy this convo and then all the other ones and stuff. And if you're feeling, you know, freaked out about getting help or something like that, maybe some of this just lets you know that other people feel that way too. And yeah, it is kind of scary, but worth it, you know? Ultimately, it genuinely is fucking quite worth it. So, all right. Thank you all so much. Thanks for being here. I adore you. Self-care. Hydrate. Be well.
We're live now, I guess. We're there. Hi. Good morning, Dr. Nick.
Morning.
I think there's a few viewers in the room. We'll see who shows. I woke up a little late today. I've just been, you know, and then I did something to my neck as we were just talking about, and I just feel like it just puts me so out of it and so distracted. So here, we're here. I didn't really do announcements or anything. Here, wait. Why don't we just do a quick little how the sausage is made? Go on Instagram. 1 second. Hi, I'm live right now on the podcast with Dr. Nick, and we're doing My Good Bad Brain. We do it every morning, every Sunday at 10 a.m. Come on over, youtube.com/jsleeper. Asking questions about mental health you want, all right? Good morning. See you at noon. Silly.
I forget sometimes that you used to be, really make the sausage.
Make what?
That you used to really make the sausage.
What do you mean? Oh, I did. Yes, I was a butcher for a period of time. Yeah. It's true. That was interesting. It's weird that the being a butcher, like, I'm haunted by this moment with my father from when I was like in, I think I was in seventh. I always remember that I was in seventh grade, but I feel like all my memories like fall into like I was 12 or seventh grade, which is close but very distinct, or kind of high school, or like six. And that's just all of them. You know what I mean? They're like, they all just pick one of those slots.
I get it.
But my dad, who, you know, was the very, very important part of my initial mental health journey, obviously, for a lot of reasons. He was deep in the turmoil of stuff that he was going on with him, like with bipolar stuff and drug stuff and, you know, ended up getting disbarred. And I remember he had this one moment that was like kind of felt like a moment of clarity where he goes, you know, most people, you ask them who they are and they tell you their job. I was a lawyer for 16 years and now I'm not. And then it was just like this weird gap, you know, this like one of those like dad moments where you're like, your father says a thing and then there's just this big hole where nothing could fall into it. You know what I mean? Nothing or everything could fall into it. I don't know. It was so weird. So I always think about that when how we identify ourselves and like that the strangeness that comes with a job. Like whenever you have a job, how much we can't help but say like this job, we can't see you. God damn it. I always forget to switch the thing over. Sorry, bro. Sorry, Franz. Doop. There. We're here. It'll pop back in. I always think the strangeness of that, like that you define your role and it makes sense, you know, it makes sense and like makes sense. I don't have to go into why it makes sense. But in my life, I was just talking about this 5 seconds before we started this thing. Like I still think of myself like as an actor first, and the acting was like the first like role that made sense to me in society that could be a job or something like that. But I really think it was like a sort of a backwards thing where I just felt like I didn't know what the fuck I was, and I felt like I could be anything, and I felt like all of the agreed upon rules of society and who we are and what we are like felt so performative already that it was like, oh well, I'll just make that my job, the thing where I pretend to be other things so hard, and then I don't have to ever pick one of them. I could just be all these things and just make my life about figuring out what it is to be a person, and that could lead to so many places. Anyway, the point of that is, so it feels like different jobs I've had in my life end up being these little episodes, and some of them are so much more important than others, even though they don't last that long. And the butcher one, I fell into the butcher thing like I had just had like a terrible breakup that you know, would fucking prompt me to finally break down and figure out all this shit and fuck up a lot over years. And I ended up, I felt pretty bad, pretty like, I feel like the butcher shop saved my life a little bit. And it was this place I could go that was like so much, I mean, 12, 16 hours every day. And it only lasted probably like a year tops of my life, less if I was being totally honest. You know, I'd come back and forth in it, and then I'd do jobs over the course of like more than a year. But it's weird that little tiny window of time feels like a piece of identity that was really powerful for other people, yeah, and also for me, that I was like, yeah, I'm always going to have like something about being a butcher. I don't know. It was just like part of who I feel like I am. It's weird.
Pretty visceral. Yeah. I mean, no pun intended. Yeah.
Mm. Well, yeah. And on that note about like, look, I only have like three thoughts. So anybody who's like a regular listener of my stuff has heard me repeat myself all the time. But I, at that time in particular, I was struck because like people would be like, oh, that's weird. So you're an actor and now you're, oh, that's an interesting trajectory or something like that. Or maybe in LA, a lot of them really think like, that's not an interesting trajectory. Like, of course, you know, you fucking fail at that and you do some other thing that's adjacent. But I found it in like, especially artisanal food, there were a lot of people who came from art. Like the person who taught me how to butcher had gone to school for sculpture. And one of the other bosses that was teaching me how to butcher, she.
Wow, that fits for me.
Yeah, she had an MFA in writing or English or something like that. Like they were literature, I don't know, something like that. Like they were all these like brilliant artist types who wind up making bread or cutting meat or making jam and preserves or something like that. You know, there's a guy who wrote this amazing, he really did lean into the cooking and stuff like that, but he wrote a whole book, an amazing guy named Kevin West, who was a friend, who wrote this whole like textbook on jamming and pickling and preserving. And he had been like a writer for like European editor for Vogue or something like that. Like And I think I truly believe, I was like, oh, well, cooks, priests, and artists are in the same business. It's just nourishment. And with butchering in particular, from like art and especially from like theater, I was like, very glibly, you know, was like, I don't think it's that weird. I was like, you're taking something that was alive once and you're cutting it up into these little dissected pieces and then hopefully making something delicious out of it and not disgusting. You know, hopefully it's not like an embarrassing, cruel waste that you're doing what you're doing. And instead it's taking care of people in some careful way, even though something has to die for it. And I was like, sounds like theater to me. Sounds like art. I don't know. Okay, I'm going to continue on this point. I just think this is so interesting because a friend pointed this out too to me, was that there is something semi, like if you list, like there's something semi religious too about butchering, where any old text, the Bible or like epic, you know, the Odyssey, whatever. In the Odyssey, whenever they'd arrive at a new land, a kingdom, they'd always like, there's always a part of the story where they'd be like, and then we sacrificed a bull for the guests, you know, to the gods, a burnt offering or whatever. But you're like, part of that's the God thing, but part of that is like a ship of people just arrived and we need to feed them. So like, yeah, there's this very religious role of like the priest as a butcher as well. Like you'd kill this animal. You had to know your way around killing the animal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not that we killed animals, but very interesting to me.
There's a great book called Trickster Makes This World. I'll just fucking find it. It's called Trickster Makes This World. But it's a really, it's like, it kind of talks, so it's just a great book in general. Lewis Hyde is the author. But he talks about kind of when people transition from sacrificing the edible part of the meat to like the part that people don't eat as much, like smoke became the offering to the god rather than like the actual meat, which allowed them to like eat the meat, right?
Yes.
And the person who did that was, I think it was Mercury. So anyway, it just talks about how there's like, you know, how tricking and deception and withholding from powerful figures is kind of like part of what allowed people to develop
Yeah.
It's an interesting story.
No, that makes kind of so much sense.
Motif that runs through a lot of different cultures.
Terry Bradley, hunting and butchering anything is ceremony. And yes, that's how I felt about it. I appreciated, it just felt me. I mean, the reason I sought it out in the first place was I could trace it back, I guess, the omnivore's dilemma, but like this feeling of growing up in urban and suburban areas and just never having a real connection to these things. And I was like, if I'm going to eat things, I would like to be closer and see if I can. Anyway, that's all off top. I mean, whatever's off topic, on topic, I don't know. I'll just start with one of these questions that came in over the weekend. And if y'all have any questions or anything you want to put in the chat, feel free. You know, we'll do our normal thing. This one question came in said, I was hoping you would be able to talk a bit about sleep deprivation and insomnia on the next stream. In my experience of CBT, the treatments are mostly directed towards anxiety, depression, and or other issues with sort of the hope that the sleep will sort itself out automatically once the other things are treated. Is there a way to actually target sleep itself without pills and beyond basic sleep hygiene?
Yeah, so this is a great question. And I think the person is right that, you know, often when someone comes in to talk about symptoms that they're having, sleep is one of them, right? So when people are anxious or depressed, it almost always impacts sleep. And sleep is actually a domain of assessment. So disrupted sleep is a diagnostic criteria for both anxiety and depression. So it's true that, like, a lot of times someone will come in and a clinician will kind of assess for sleep, but they're focused on, like, the kind of global symptoms of anxiety and depression. They target those, and usually it does work out that when the person's depressive or symptoms of depression or anxiety sort of resolve a little bit, that as a kind of byproduct, their sleep improves. That's typical. At the same time, there are lots of other disorders that have really profound impacts on sleep. I mean, certainly, you know, bipolar disorder has a profound impact on sleep. There's evidence to suggest that what we used to call thought disorders, like schizophrenia and related disorders, impact sleep as well. And sleep is certainly disrupted profoundly in PTSD. And the more that we study sleep, the more that we have realized that sleep is actually its own sort of core issue. And sleep in the context of PTSD, sleep disturbance is an independent predictor of suicidality. So it's very, very important. Mm-hmm. Also, just like an interesting, you know, I do a lot of military research, and the military, U.S. military, spent a lot of money, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, or maybe a little earlier, like throughout the 90s, trying to figure out how to make service members function better with less sleep. I mean, like, mm-hmm. hundreds of millions of dollars. And they eventually just gave up on that line of research, and they pivoted to how to get military service members to sleep better. Because what we realize is you can't function better without sleep. You have to sleep. So
even with, like, pills and stuff, even, like, speed and stuff like that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other things, you know, but yeah.
Because I this is just so random, but I was recently – I don't have doing military research the way you are, but – Netflix recommends World War II in color to me. So, but there was this one thing I never realized because I'm not going to get off into it's hard because with you, we would talk about this kind of dumb shit. Whatever. It feels off topic. But apparently, like, the German army in World War I was, like, way better an army than the Nazis in World War II. Like, the army was just like,
on death.
Yeah.
We were on death the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that the second.
Blitzed, which people should, if they're interested.
What?
The book is called Blitzed, and it's about the German army's use
of speed.
Yeah.
That's what I had never really, I'd heard something like that, but they were saying, like, the reason Blitzkrieg worked was because they could just leave these guys awake for 3 days in a row on Preventin or whatever it was called. Like, this amphetamine was, like, very common in Germany at the time. Like, you just buy it.
Oh, my command was on it, too.
It's so fucking weird to think, like, it's just, I don't know. I think that's why, like, sometimes in, like, popular culture, when, like success win bro kind of stuff just feels like it tracks, or, like, Silicon Valley weirdos all feel like Elon Musk, like, it all feels like right there on the edge of, like, fascism and white supremacy and stuff like that, is because it's got such a let's start a fucking restaurant together energy to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, you know, let's go kill a bunch of people. It's going to be great. It's a good idea. Just do the numbers. I did the numbers. You know what I mean?
Right.
Anyway, wait. So, but sleep, though, there's no way to get around needing it.
Have to sleep. I mean, it's like, you know, people have heard this stuff before that, like, sleep deprivation is the fastest way to experience madness, which is, you know, we could figure out a way that that's true. I'm not sure what all those words mean together, but mm-hmm. but the point is that sleep is really fucking important. And to answer this person's questions directly, there is a CBT for insomnia protocol that targets sleep. Okay. So I put two links in the,
yes, I'll share these links out. I know I haven't updated our little drive thing, but if you go to Patreon, the patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain, I'll put a post with it. It's a public post. You don't have to be like a member of the Patreon to access it or anything. And I've created a Google Drive folder where I've been dropping Dr. Nick's resources. So I'll include this one, which is, do you want to say what it's called if somebody just wants to try to Google it too?
Yeah, I mean, if you just Google CBT for insomnia, you'll get a bunch of hits. You can read the studies if you go to like Google Scholar. But, you know, Mayo Clinic has a nice little piece on it. Sleepfoundation.org is the one that I also put up at CBT for insomnia techniques and case study. but yeah, it targets sleep, but it does use CBT techniques. But I mean, everything uses CBT techniques to the extent that you're just examining your thoughts, collecting evidence in support of them, and trying, you know, behavioral interventions. So don't get turned off if you're like, I don't like CBT. Just take a look.
What do you do? Do you have any tricks to sleep if you can't sleep?
I smoke a little weed before I go to sleep.
For sure, yeah.
I've done that, yeah. Sometimes I don't do that, or if I'm traveling or whatever, or it's just time to take a break. And usually my sleep, I'll have a little trouble sleeping like the first night, and then I just reset and it becomes normal. But the things that work for me are like exercise, you know, like bigger exercise to tire the body. And honestly, meditation techniques, like the ability to recognize when your attention is getting pulled onto like sticky thoughts and to redirect your focus. You know, sometimes I don't think this stuff will work for everyone. Like I'm lucky that sleep has not ever really been like a big problem for me, but I will, you know, there's sometimes when I'm just like, my mind is running and I can't sleep. Like that will occasionally happen. But, you know, mostly what I'm able to do is tell myself there's really nothing more important for me to do right now than try to get some sleep. There's nothing I can think about that's more important than that. There's no worrying I can do that's more important. There's no problem solving I'm going to do right now at 1 a.m. that's more important than me sleeping. So usually when my mind starts to go do that stuff, I just can tell myself, you know what, this isn't that important for me to think about right now, and I redirect it onto the breath. But I have a lot of experience doing that because of all of the meditation practice I've done, you know, so that kind of muscle is there for me.
Someone just said in the chat, this is interesting for me as I have narcolepsy and I'm currently fighting a sleep attack, lying here with eyes closed. So if I wish we could trade problems. Strict with yourself about like screen hygiene, about like sleep hygiene, blue light and stuff like that?
I mean, the evidence is very strong helps. So yeah, there's really good evidence about the amount of blue light you get in. I actually heard a presentation about this at the Military Behavioral Health Research Symposium in Kissimmee, Florida last year. So yeah, turn that fucking thing off. I mean, if here's the thing. If you're not
I'm so fucking bad about that. I like fall asleep to just watching shit all the time.
Well, that's the thing. If you're not having problems, like don't worry about it. But if you are having problems, turn off the fucking blue light.
I think I probably am having problems with it. I would recommend in the past I've gotten better at it, because I do feel like, I don't know, I just have I feel voices like help me go to sleep. It's really weird. I don't know. Podcasts, or better yet, an audiobook, because then you at least don't have the blue light coming in your eyes, and put some nice like noise canceling headphones on. And
I mean, sleep hygiene is not a joke, man. Like there are whole sleep hygiene protocols, like routine, using the bed only for sleep and sex, like all of this stuff. So, you know, so, if you're having problems, you should follow all those.
Yeah.
You
know, someone asked, do you know if red light filters actually do anything? I wonder if they mean, do they mean blue light filters? Or red light, because they only let red light in, then it's blue. I don't, whatever. It's blue light, right? Is the
mode on your phone, or like night mode on your Kindle. Not night mode, like the dark, but, you know, sleep time mode, or whatever the fuck it's called, where they do filter out the blue light.
Right.
Yeah, that stuff helps. But thinking like, oh, what like filter should I switch on my device to like sleep better? That I wouldn't go there first, you know? Like, yeah, put that filter on, but do the other stuff. Like,
plug in your phone in the other room. Or I guess if you need it in the room for the timer, like at the end of your bed, like some other.
Well, but even like, yes, do the device hygiene, but all the other sleep hygiene.
Yeah.
Make yourself get up at a certain time, go to bed at a certain time, use the bed only for sleep and sex. Don't like chill in your bed all fucking day long.
Oh, that's good.
You know, like, yeah. do some form of vigorous exercise. Don't eat within 2 hours of going to bed. There's like a whole list.
I fuck that one up all the time.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're having problems, you should try these things.
Also, one thing that's helped me, sometimes sounds so silly, and I don't mean to, if you're having like intense insomnia or sleep deprivation, which I've been in those phases, I don't mean to like minimize, but one thing to look at for me is your stimulant intake over the day and just like how much you're taking and how recently.
Yeah, that's part of the sleep hygiene protocol too, is don't have any stimulant beverage after noon.
You know, yeah, like literally after noon. I feel like I drink so much coffee. Well, I've really cut back a lot and I put half decaf beans in the thing now. But like, dude, I think a lot of us are just saturating our fucking neurons or whatever in caffeine molecules.
Yeah, so you gotta, and actually the way caffeine doesn't like provide something that wakes you up, it just blocks adenosine, which is like the molecule that makes you feel sleepy. So, but anyway, there are these sleep hygiene protocols. So, you know, they cover all of this stuff. And so, you know, this person may have followed those to a T and they're not working. And then you can try the CBT for anxiety. I would also, excuse me, for insomnia, I would also add like vigorous physical exercise.
I agree.
Earlier in the day.
I was going to reiterate that one that you said earlier. Yes, I found the best I sleep tends to be when I've been on like heavier lifting cycles, because your body just has to repair. Your body's just like, fuck you. I can't. You sleep so heavily.
Yeah. So those are things I would try. But if you're not, if you're just kind of like, yeah, sleep hygiene protocol, follow that thing to a T, man. Follow it to a T. You know, if you're just kind of half doing it, it's not going to be as effective. If you are fully following it to a T and it's just not working for you, you could add in this CBT for anxiety protocol and get yourself to full physical exhaustion.
Yes. I will also say this becomes like not very like, you know, sciencey. Well, it does. It's just like more holistic, I guess. I don't know. When we were like studying my brother did this. I'm fucking wearing the shirt somehow. D20. He made this.
My brother,
you can still get this product we made called Reboot. And it's like a sleep aid tea, basically. The idea was like, we're all just like these gamers and nerds and fucking stare at screens all day long. So that's very bad for you, especially like if you game and like it stimulates your anxiety and things like that. The gaming basically gives you all the same adrenaline responses to as if you were doing physical activity, but without the physical like dump that helps counteract some of those things. So it just has this cortisol levels are all raised and blah, blah, blah. So we made this thing called Reboot, and it's just like a horse tranquilizer of holistic stuff, you know? We put like magnesium and valerian and 5-HTP and, you know, melatonin, like all these things. And that helped me. That tea really would like settle me out, and I like sleep on that. But not, I'm not even pitching the tea. I'm just saying like there are some things, like have you ever tried, did melatonin work for you or anything like that?
Yeah, the research on melatonin is okay. Yeah, I've taken melatonin before. I take like, I'll sometimes have like a sleepy time tea, although now it's like 100 fucking degrees in Vegas. So
yeah.
I'm getting more tea. But yeah,
magnesium.
Those you can try them.
Some of that stuff I think helps, even if it's just maybe it's just like, you know, I heard zinc helps what I was doing, because there's whole blends for lifting that are like recovery blends, but some of them really do help, like, you know.
I just would be careful about any kind of what the fuck are they called,
supplement
that's not from a very reputable source, because they're not regulated. You know, they could have any fucking thing in them. So just be careful.
Right. We're pretty sure ours has what we say in it, but we're not scientists. Yeah. It was a lab. You know what I mean?
Yeah. With everything, my recommendation is to work your way down from the highest standard of evidence. So, you know, like the sleep hygiene protocol and the CBT for insomnia, very high level of
support
evidence. You know, melatonin has been very well studied, seems to be very safe. That's when I would go, you know.
I also have a dumb sleep game that Allie taught me, which is really good. It's her mom's. You just like pick a category, like fruits, and then you just go through the alphabet and you go like apples, bananas, carrots. I don't know if carrots count, etc. And you just go, and it's like a, it's, I don't know. And always, by the time you get too far, you get to the end, you just pick another category, whatever. It's like a better counting sheep. And I will say the last thing I was going to say, the light filters. I have, you worn those gaming glasses, you know? They're like, they filter out blue light when you stare at screens. They're like these yellow, they look like shooting glasses. They're really funny. But they do seem to help, I think, when you just wear them in the evening, and you don't have to change.
Bro, even when you're the last five in Warzone and you got to clutch up. I don't know, man.
By the way, I did sign in. I played the tutorial, at least of Warzone, and it's all updated. So I will jump in, a game with you soon. Someone said they had good results with CBD. Yeah, I mean, a nice indica couch, you know what I mean? Yeah, CBD, I've had that help too. Whatever. I have a feeling that we've gone off about this stuff a lot, and the person is like, yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's usually how I feel.
I'd like to take a look at the links, the CBT.
For sure. We will post
those. And the physical exercise and the like physical relaxation protocols, like the progressive muscle relaxation, which we've linked to before. Doing muscle relaxation every day, especially for like 15 minutes, that will reset your resting anxiety threshold. So that's another one to try. But like, you know, this shit's work. You know, you're going to have to do fucking work.
Wait, what resets your resting anxiety?
It's called progressive muscle relaxation. Yeah, we have a link to it, but it's basically that process of like tensing and then relaxing your each muscle, like from your fucking face all the way down to your toes.
I should do more of that.
You do that like 5 days in a row, I would imagine. And coupled with the vigorous exercise of the CBT for insomnia protocol, that should help. But if this person could let us try that for, let us know.
I think they weighed in the chat, actually.
Oh, great.
I've got the sleep hygiene down, but always without fail, wake up at 3 with no possibility of falling back asleep. Could it be I just need to sleep in sequences and shouldn't try and fix it, maybe? Yeah.
Could be. Try waking up at try just getting up at 3 and see how that goes.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. That I kind of... I've gone through a little phase. Frankly, I love it when my body like wakes me up, you know, earlier than everybody else. I feel like that's a really good time to do creative work if you can make yourself do it. Like something about those early morning hours when you're the only person around. I know this is easier said than done. Like if you have a real job you got to go to then at like 9 or 10 in the morning or earlier. And then, you know, you get tired around 11 and you want to take a nap and you can't. So I totally feel if that's an issue, but.
Yeah, I mean, there also is evidence that, you know, previously people slept in like two distinct cycles, you know, so there would be like exactly what this person's talking about, like an early morning cycle where they're like get up at 3 and like be awake until noon. And then they would like take a nap until like, you know, 6 and then they would get up again. Like the founding fathers write a lot about that. So
really?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, dude, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
That rocks, honestly.
Society that forces you to conform to a particular schedule. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I feel like when I felt best, like kind of part of this quarantine, I was doing this, like I fell into the schedule of I'd wake up at like 6 or something every day, just naturally. I'd like wake up really early. I'd do things. I'd do some exercise. I'd end up falling asleep around 1 for a couple hours, like which I never nap, but like all of a sudden had this schedule. And then I'd do stuff in the afternoon, evening, and it was just like, maybe that's, I don't know. I was like, maybe there's a reason siesta exists in a lot of the world.
Well, there's no reason to, I mean, the thing is we also like moralize this, you know, like everything else. Like,
yeah,
we're totally. Like, oh, you're bad if you stay up late and you're bad if you sleep late and you're good if you wake up early like a good boy. You know, that's all nonsense. It's all just social conditioning. But if you live in a life where the social conditioning is important, then, you know, you got to fucking do it.
Right.
So this person, they already have sleep hygiene down, which is awesome. But the CBT protocol for insomnia is different than that. So it includes the sleep hygiene, but it includes other things too. So check out that CBT for insomnia protocol. Part of that, though, is like, yeah, if you do wake up and you just cannot go back to sleep, just fucking get up, you know?
Yeah, just give it a shot. Just see how your rhythm plays out. All right. I like that. All right. I'm going to go to this other question or statement question. What do you, I don't know. It's a very relatable situation. Sorry. Well, they asked another question. So let's stay on sleep really quick here. Could it be harmful to just get 5-ish hours of sleep a night?
I mean, if we think about the normal curve again, most people will see cognitive performance deficits if they're not getting closer to 6 to 8 hours. But people are different. There's variability. And this person might be on one of those standard deviation tails, So you will know, you will see if you are, getting 5 hours of sleep a night and it's like working for you after a couple weeks. Congratulations. You're a very lucky person and mm-hmm. that could be working for you. If, you're starting to have performance problems and you're not doing that well, then, you could think about some other interventions. But
I find kind of also like what you said, like the whole like let it ride thing kind of sometimes it just resets you. Like you'll start just falling asleep earlier. You'll get your 5 hours of sleep because you woke up at 3 the first few days or week and, keep going. And then suddenly your body like, okay, now we go to sleep at like 10 or, whatever normal time.
Yeah. 9. And look, people are different. I mean, there's some people, I think there are far more people who are like, I'm fine with 5 hours of sleep or 4 or 3. And they're really not. But there are some people who perform well, with that amount of sleep.
That's me, bro. I'm an animal. Hustle hard. Grind every day.
Our sleep needs also change as we get older. Older adults sleep less than younger adults. Obviously, teenagers sleep all fucking day long because their bodies are growing. So there's really a lot of variability. And I think you've got to do the evaluation, individually in terms of your performance and how you feel.
Ass. Our regenerative systems, as they succumb to entropy, no longer need to rest as we approach the cold embrace of the grave. What a thrill. on that stupid goth note. Okay, this person submitted this question situation. It's this one's going to be a little tough maybe for some people to hear. It's I've been here. I'm grateful. I don't think I'm here right now. But I say that, but it's like 2 weeks ago, I was in a really bad depressive episode and it happened. This is one of those things you might battle your whole life if you have depression, which again, I'm not diagnosing. I couldn't, but reading it, I was like, that's what depression feels like to me. And I get that pretty regularly. So less than I used to. I'm going to just share this, whatever. This person wrote, most days I feel like an empty shell. I spend so much of my time and energy trying to fake positivity and happiness with my family members and friends, but I'm beaten down and I wish I could disappear. I'm always looking for an escape, no matter how temporary, just to give my mind a break. I feel like I am nothing and my entire existence is useless. I pour myself out to fulfill others' needs around me because I have to, but there's nothing left for me. I don't want to die and I'm not trying to, but what a relief it would be. I'm so sorry. This is so heavy. Thanks for listening. I don't apologize for that real quick. Just don't. There's no apologies for that. That's I'm like getting emotional. I read it to Dr. Nick before to give him some preamble of things we might talk about today. And it's weird. I just can't speak publicly without my emotions being more heightened. That's a very powerful thing to share. It's very difficult to go through that. I've been there a lot. I'm going to let Dr. Nick respond.
Yeah, so I want to say thank you to this person for sharing this with us. And yeah, there's just absolutely no apology necessary. This is what we're here to do. So a couple things. This person sounds depressed, and I would urge you to go and see a therapist. It's critical that you do that. Okay, it's really, really important. And you deserve to see one, and you deserve to feel better. And please, please make an appointment. Or it sounds like you're fucking tired. So find someone who you trust to help you make an appointment. Okay.
Yeah.
The other piece is we're not going to be able to do this now, but the other piece is it sounds like this person's interpersonal boundaries are pretty porous, in some cases, and then very private in others. So it's, if you're pouring yourself out to everyone else because you have to, maybe you're a mom or you have a lot of responsibilities. I can just tell you, one of the things you're going to have to work on is your interpersonal boundaries, because you're going to need to set firm boundaries because it's not working. The strategy that you're using, pouring yourself out to others because you have to, it's not working. It's not working for you. It's not working for them. It's got to change. Okay. But you're going to need a really good therapist to help you to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you deserve that help. So please make an appointment with someone. It's serious. It's not something that you can kind of, you know, put off any longer. Make the appointment tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or this, you know, if you can't do it tomorrow, do it this week. And find someone to help you do it.
Some, really, I will say, and I hear that someone in the comments, you know, chimed in right away, like finances are an issue. And I totally get that. I will say that exactly what Dr. Nick is saying, I didn't do it on purpose. But I remember, this is how I remember the chain of events that like got me into the therapy that like started to actually, like I had gone to some therapy before in my life, but I don't think I was really scratching the issues. I don't think I was really getting into it. I was in a really fucking bad place. I remember, I'm glad that I had a group of close friends that I could text the group chat like, hey, a string of things that the tone was different than it usually was for them, I guess. And I was like, I just said, I'll basically exactly what you said. I just don't know why I'm alive. I don't really know what the point of being alive is. And the language to me also, again, I'm not a fucking doctor, but like things that I've just noticed as patterns when other people seem to talk about depression that resonates with my own experiences of depression is when you start talking about like feeling like nothing and then the words existence entering in there, like do I exist, do I not exist, what's the fucking point of you know, that kind of shit.
Passive suicidality, and it's very serious.
Yeah, that's what'd you just call it?
Passive suicidality.
Yes. Okay, so I got that whatever. So I was grateful in the end. I was lucky enough that one of my friends, for whatever reason, they heard it in the tone or in the chat. They were all being nice to me. One of them was like, where are you right now? And I was like, I'm just home. And they came over with their dog and we went for a walk. They were like, we went for the walk the dog. And I was like, that might have saved my life that day. And they were very helpful also about like, you got to get therapy and help me find, because they knew about it. They had gone themselves to a sliding scale community available therapy place. I went to, it was called, the SoCal Counseling Center in Los Angeles. And I went to the SoCal Counseling Center and it was terrifying. I didn't think about it at the time. I was just like, I made the appointment for the intake. It was $50 for the intake, which I know can be, even that can be a hurdle. But, and it was for me at the time. It was fucking tough. I was like, I don't know. Sometimes I think back and I'm like, I don't know how I even lived. Like you think about how much money you're spending on drinking and stuff like that and knowing how the end of month always was. And who knows? But somehow I found the $50 and I think they'll always help you if you're in crisis. They won't turn people away if you're in fucking crisis. They just don't do that. You know, there might be an imaginary bill, but they just don't do it. I in my experience, whatever. So I went to my appointment. They had me, And they did my intake, which is when they find out if it's like a good idea for you or not. And I remember sitting in that fucking waiting room and I felt like crying just sitting there. And I was like, to this day, I describe it as I felt like a dog at the vet. I just felt like I was so fragile and shaky and like my tail was between my legs and my fucking ears were back. And I was just like, and I'm sorry, I'm just a very emotional person and I kind of like have reactivate things. I come back to them pretty easily. So I went in the room and I talked to the lady doing the intake and I basically said the stuff you're saying and I just started crying. I couldn't not. And they usually like wait a long time. Like there's a few weeks, you know, these sliding scale places are tough because there's like a lot of people like us need help and the resources aren't always there. As Dr. Nick has said several times before, if you're very poor or very rich, then there's some actually great resources available to you. But if you're in the middle there, it's really hard. It's expensive. It's prohibitive. There's a lot of people who need help. It's tough. So she was great and heard me, saw what I couldn't see because I felt very numb to it also. I just thought like this is life, you know? You're just like that. Then you don't think of yourself as like dangerous to yourself or anything. I just like, yeah, this is just what life is. Right? It's fucking terrible all the time, and nothing has any meaning. And you're not sure if you even exist, and who cares? And she said, you're in crisis. She's like, and for some reason, even that just started to like crack me. I was like, this is an outside person who didn't even know me being like, we got to get you in here. You're in a lot of trouble. And I was like, yeah, okay. They got me in like later that week and I started therapy. At, I think $20 a session, 20 or 25, because they work with you. They're like, what can you afford? I think part of it is, part of it might be money. Part of it might be like that the center needs money. But for me, I think that part of it is like they want you to be committed. Like, are you really coming to do this? You're like investing literal money in the time and then literal time to get to the appointment. And that was the big click for me, was like, people who have a thing like my father always had with like, I'm always smarter than my therapist. That's just about you not clicking into the thing. It doesn't have anything to do with who your therapist is. Like, are you there to work on yourself or not? And I was just so desperate. I needed it so bad at that point that I guess I was. And I started going once a week and then trying to do this stuff in my life. And it helped me a lot. It was years before I would go switch over to try a psychiatrist. But that is the therapist ultimately who recommended psychiatry to me and thought like, maybe you're a candidate. And years before I even tried that. And she was who I called up to say, do you have a recommendation? And gave me my, you know what I mean? Like, that therapist was a big important part of my life. And I, this person in the chat, has added, I don't want to, they wanted to stay anonymous. So I'm trying to keep it as anonymous as I can for them. But there's a fear that exists that I'll open up and I'll tell a therapist these thoughts and they'll just ship you off to an inpatient facility. Dr. Nick, will that happen?
Yeah, that will not happen. No, it won't. We like restrictive inpatient facilities are, they're so rarely used that's not going to happen. Even people who are like, okay, so for example, when I worked with in DBT, right, in dialectical behavior therapy, people with borderline personality disorder who are very suicidal, our goal is to keep people out of inpatient settings. That's our goal. So you're not going to, even if you say that you have intermittent suicidality, you're not going to go get shipped off to an inpatient facility. That's just not how things work anymore. Yeah. So, but of course it's natural to feel that. And I totally understand that finances are a barrier. They are a real barrier and it's a complete failing of our system. It's totally fucked up. This is why I'm asking you to recruit an ally to help you, because it's going to take hours of calling around, doing internet research, feeling frustrated, feeling like, fuck it, I don't want to do this. Like, you're going to go through all of that. That's why I think it's important to have an ally to help you do the research and call. Like, commit to a day, you know? Commit to a day, you know, make some food, sit down. Like, you're going to spend your day, and maybe it's going to be more than a day, trying to get this shit figured out. You know, find community mental health resources in your area. I would start with public resources. I'm sure they're overwhelmed right now, but they typically have pretty decent standards of care at pretty low cost.
What do you think about any of those apps or anything? Like, I don't know. I haven't used any.
I think it's better than nothing. It's just that, you know, I think the research is out, you know. Telehealth, the research on telehealth seems to be pretty good, but these particular apps, like, I don't know the quality of the therapists that are on there. I think they all have to be licensed, but
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I feel like it seems to the option existing to me. I'm like, again, I'm in Los Angeles. Anybody who's in a major city will be able to find some of these. We'll probably be able to find a sliding scale place or some kind of support group or something like that. I want to say this too. I don't know. This is not official advice, and Dr. Nick can like say what he thinks about it. But for me, I don't know what your situation is either. But I went to Al-Anon for a little bit. Which is like family members of addicts or loved ones. They say, you know, it's for anybody with a qualifier. And if you live in LA, I always joke, like, you know, you throw a rock, you got a fucking qualifier. You have an addict in your life somewhere. And addicts and stuff, it's to me very close to the codependency stuff. And I think it's very contagious. It can affect you very poisonously. And if you are, based on some of the things you're describing about boundary issues and how intertwined you are with your support network, I'm just throwing a rock in a dark place that you might have a qualifier in your life. Either way, that's a completely free resource, those 12-step groups. And group therapy, I think it can, is very effective, or can be. And Al-Anon is, I felt like, a wonderful resource to go and speak about things I was going through and hear all these other other people who... when you hear your experiences and thoughts come out of a stranger's mouth and go like, oh, I'm the only fucking one I thought who has that. And then you realize you're not. It's very powerful. I mean, I don't know why I'm so watery about it this morning. Well, because I'm scared. I'm scared for you. And I was scared for myself. And nobody should fucking have to live like that. Somebody in the chat goes, you know, I had a similar moment when I first opened up about self-harm. I felt very blasé about it. But he, the therapist, said something like, we want to help you stop this and stop doing something potentially fatal. And I realized, ah, shit, that's, I remember that was my first therapist. Again, another moment that I always repeat, but like was fucked me up, was I was like, one day I was like, I don't even know why I'm here. And they're like, what do you mean? Because I was a very young man, you know? I was like, because I know I don't have any real problems. I know I'm like a good looking white straight guy in America. I don't have any fucking real problems. And I'm doing, you know, what am I just here? It's just, you know, it's really hard to be alive some days. It's really hard just to breathe. And they just stopped and they just were like, that's a real problem. I was like the first person who fucking said that and made me go, oh my God, it is okay for that to be a real problem. It fucking sucks, you know, to live like that and feel like that. And you don't, I mean, I don't know. I don't like the phrase. I don't want to say you don't have to, because literally you wouldn't feel that way if you didn't feel that way. Like, you kind of do have to. Your body and your brain are doing that. But yeah. There's a way to change it potentially. Allie dropped this on my desk too. Open Path Collective. She says it's a sliding scale place. I don't know if that's also local LA. I'll ask her later. But that's another. Someone said, my local public university has a community mental health clinic where PhD students can provide services to the community at a lower cost. Do other universities offer this?
Well, it depends on the university. Most of them will have their trainees in the like mental health clinic for students. Not all universities are going to have like community facing provider networks, but like most big universities have some integration with the community where they're providing some services. And also trainee therapists, that their outcomes in general are just as good as kind of veteran therapists. So don't let that put you off. You know, trainees can be, cause they're dedicated. They're like fucking reading the research and they're getting great supervision. They're not burnt out. So, you know, their outcomes are good.
Allie, is this in LA or is this, where is this? It's like a website thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. She says this thing, Open Path Collective, is a database of sliding scale places. So you can go, if you Google Open Path Collective, I guess you can find resources potentially there.
But find a friend, this person in the chat, find a friend to help you. Cause it's going to be tiring and it's going to be a fucking pain in the ass to do this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
You got to do it, but find someone to help you.
Even if you listen to this pod, I mean, there's a good chance like, my favorite thing about this fucking group is like, it's not a huge podcasting thing or something, but like there's a group, solidarity and fucking validation, I realized, are the point of this thing. And like with this quarantine calisthenics we're doing, there's a group of like 10 or so people in there, or 15 people who are like, are really here. And I wouldn't be surprised if you got nobody in your consistent life, that somebody around this group might just be able to check in with you or something. It's, you know, I just don't want you to feel like you're alone with this. There's, you know, this person, is there a way to find local to them? Yeah, I believe so. And they're in New York. If you're in New York, even if you're not in New York City, I'm pretty sure you'll be able to find something that you can get to. I guess I haven't checked it out, but check out this Open Path Collective. I'm going to Google it right now.
Yeah. Big cities like this are going to have better public mental health, resources. And so it's hard to navigate the public mental health resources, but they're usually good because they have like high standards of training, and it's hard to work there, you know, because they have like good benefits and stuff. So they have good therapists. Can take a while, you know, but
well, go check out, I just Googled it briefly and it does look like it might be a pretty good resource, is this Open Path Collective. The front page has like a enter your city or zip code thing. It says online therapy is available. I don't know. Check it out. It says as long as there's financial need. It looks like a, you know, check it out. That might help. And then there might be other, I'm sure there's resources if you type into sliding scale and where you live, sliding scale therapy. And then again, that is why I mentioned the Al-Anon thing, is just because 12-step programs are just gatherings of people that are totally free. And there's coffee and, you know, cookies sometimes and stuff. And it's just nice to me. I mean, I noticed in my life, a lot of 12-step people end up in my life, like as close friends, like sober people and stuff like that. And I think it's because I'm a little bit weird and I'm definitely a lot open. And 12-step people are ready to fucking go there right away all the time. They'll talk about anything. They won't judge you. And if they do judge you, they put it way back behind everything else. They're able to bury their judgment and just be there because they've been where you've been. They know what it's like to really feel like that existential, that at death's door feeling, and they won't fucking dismiss it. Sometimes it'll be a little harsh. Sometimes it'll be a little crazy. All 12-step people are different, blah, 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 blah. But there is, I think, an understanding and an acceptance from within the circle.
There's less fear and less shaming, for sure.
Completely. So I don't know. That's why I just mentioned that one, because I know it's not official therapy or anything, but it's free and there's 12 steps like all over the goddamn country, like everywhere.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. That's tough. I guess we kind of reached the end of our hour anyway, but I just hope you know that you're not alone in those experiences at the very least, that like they're very common. You were in a group of people who really fucking, oh, there, Terry even offered. And Terry's a Mama Terry, dude. I mean, like, if Terry's there saying that they'll be your accountability buddy, Terry means it. Mama Terry's a very fucking loving person.
Yeah, I can say one other thing also. So I think a lot of times people feel like when they're going through these experiences that they're so bad that there's just there, it's not possible for there to be a way out and a way forward. And let me just reassure you that there absolutely is a way out and a way forward. And that even though you are feeling like this now, it is entirely possible, and not just possible, but it is likely if you go through these steps and processes that you will feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You absolutely feel better. You can absolutely have a new way of managing and dealing with these issues that are making you feel so horrible. And you can emerge from this. You can emerge from this and you can emerge from it and not go back.
Yeah, absolutely. And Erica also offered. Erica, thank you so much. Like Terry, like the people in this group really are like pretty sensational. I think everybody kind of relates to each other on this like very human level of seeing that fucking void. Yeah, man, it's impossible when you're in it to believe it'll ever end.
Right.
I know like the feeling is infinite, but that's the glib thing they say about suicidality, you know, like a permanent solution to a temporary problem is very real. You know, like I know it feels like you'll never fucking get out from under it. The idea of existence, hey, I don't know, may never make sense. It still doesn't to me. But it's like that's the whole point of bad faith, good faith existentialism, is if you can just always try to tip yourself onto the side that says nothing means anything, this makes no sense, and that's why it's so beautiful and special. Like it's a one in infinity chance at like this, you know? Feelings of love or eating a piece of pizza and getting a feel what that tastes like. And that's the whole stupid don't kill yourself list I do, is just to remind me of these dumb things. Like I can find infinity in a cup of coffee. Like it's just so good. It's so poetic and perfect. So I try to like latch onto those things. But I promise you, like even if you're in the deepest despair where you can't taste anything and you can't fucking feel, like, God, because I've been there, it will go away. And I know time makes no sense, and I love poems. It's easy to go like, there is no end to it in that moment. I know. But you'll reach a new infinity where it will be something good, or at least not just fucking agonizing. And so I'm always just like, for sure. I know it's impossible to believe, but there's a better feeling you can get to.
Yeah, you can get there. You can absolutely get there. It's just, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a struggle to get going.
Yeah.
It's gonna suck. There's an analogy in DBT, which is like there's an aluminum ladder out of hell, you know, and like right now you're in hell. You're in hell. It's burning. It's fucking horrible. It's super hot. But you know, you're there. And as soon as you start climbing up that ladder, it's going to feel worse because it's hot. It's hotter than where you are. But if you just keep going up the ladder, eventually it will cool down. If you hop off the ladder because it's hotter, you're stuck and you're going to have to go up that motherfucker again.
But damn.
You keep going up it. There's going to be that period where like the flames of hell where you are have heated up that metal and it's worse to hold on to. But if you just keep going up it, it will cool off and start to get better.
That's so good.
And you can do that.
I've never heard that. And that's so good. And that's, I always feel like that's the toughest thing when I have a friend, I don't want to, you know, recently in my life who like, that's the scariest part for everybody who loves you too. And everybody who meets you and knows you and relates to what you're going through, like will love you. You can't help it. When you see somebody else's common humanity, you can't help but love them. And, it's the scariest thing when you're trying to convince them. That's a great analogy that like, it's going to feel harder. Like the first barrier that comes up as you try to get yourself help or something like that. Maybe it's even trying to find a friend who will sit with you. Maybe it's trying to find the time in your schedule when none of us can afford any fucking bills and you have to go work and you're just like, I can't take a day to eat food and look this stuff up. The first barrier is going to feel like a sign from God that you're supposed to die. Like, you know what I mean? It's just going to feel, and that idea of the burning ladder is so fucking real. You just got to keep climbing. Your fingers are blistering. You just got to fucking, don't even have faith in yourself. Just listen to the words other people are saying and just keep fucking moving up out of it.
Because depression is insidious, right? There's this thing called the economic theory of depression. I won't go into it. It's very cognitive, but it's very good. But the point is depression is like, sitting like this because you have no resources and you don't want to take any risk because everything has fucking failed. And as soon as you take any risk, move at all from this position where you're just barely hanging on, it's worse. Like, it's worse. It's worse. It's going to feel worse.
Yeah.
You have to do it. You have to do it. And then it will start to feel better. It will.
Yes, it definitely will. Yeah.
Please follow up with us.
Please do. Please do follow up. Send another email. Let us know what you're doing with what you're, you know, maybe where you're searching for. Just, you know, you can send it to my good bad brain again and stuff. But please also, you got two fucking good bad brains out there right away who offer, and I'm sure that they'll be there if you want. And if they're not, don't take it as a sign that the God hates you. It's just life. It's just that's how it's gonna go. You know what I mean? What was that? You were making me think of something earlier. I know what it was. The fucking title of the show, My Good Bad Brain. The reason I called it that was because of this. Was I basically got this sense, I realized one day my brain tries to kill me sometimes. That's just how it is. That's how my brain is. It's also good. It makes me taste things that taste good. And I got some cinnamon rolls that proofed overnight. I'm very excited to go put those in the oven after that. Thank you, brain, for that. But also, for some of us, my brain tries to fucking murder me sometimes. And I think it's in kind of a funny, like, weird drunk uncle, like, who's like you know, conspiracy theory nut kind of a way, that like I think my brain like just thinks I'm a lizard person sometimes, and it's just like, they're coming for us, and like locked and loaded with one in the chamber, and I'm like, whoa, you gotta go to bed, Uncle Jarrett, you know what I mean? But my point is, like, just realize it's not you, it's not like who you are, it's just a thing you're going through, okay? And you're gonna survive it. That being said, coffee, sandwiches, lavender soap, always number one on my fucking, on my don't kill yourself list. But like, I don't know, that helps me. Again, not real stuff, but like, don't, of course, nobody's going to hate anybody for not reaching out. Sorry, that somebody said in the, you know, no, that's not how this works. You should just know that people are there if you want it. If you feel like you want it, it's there. Don't worry about it. It's not like about you. That's like, so I'm laughing because that's how it feels, right? Like, that's how I feel, is I'm just like, I'm bad. Ali and I joke about this stock photo we found once of like a toddler. Who knows why they took the photo? It's a toddler with a punching glove on, punching themselves in the head, and it's like the saddest fucking stock footage I've ever seen in the world. You're just like, who even made you pose? Who made you do this? Because that's who we are.
A
sick person. This kid just looks so fucking sad, punching himself in the head with a boxing glove. And we're just like, that is how it fucking feels. Is you're just like punching your fucking little sweet baby head. You didn't do anything wrong. It's fine. Stop. You're not bad. Anyway.
I just want to point out, though, not to get too real here, but, you know, of course, it's not bad for you not to reach out. But I think this is a small window into part of the problem here, which is like feeling, you know, back to the boundaries, feeling like you have to do all these things for other people in your life, but there's a barrier to asking for help for yourself because it's hard. Maybe brings up feelings of shame. Maybe brings up feelings of intense vulnerability, may have been let down in the past. So even that reluctance to ask for help from people who are volunteering it, it's not bad. It's just an indicator of probably a set of problems that are present in your life and causing you to feel alone. So, you know, we're getting a little tiny microcosm of that just in this interaction. Mm. So I think what's good about that is it points to a road towards change that's going to be really hard to get down, but that's available. Does that make sense?
Yes, it totally does. I like the point of that.
Literally right now, what's kind of present in the boundary problems.
You're saying like the idea is the sort of hopeful thing is like by the fact that you're exhibiting these predicted behaviors is like actually a great relief in some sense because it's studied, it's practiced. This is like a system that has repeated itself many times and there are very effective solutions out there for it.
It doesn't mean that this person's specific experience isn't unique. It is. It's just that we are seeing even in this interaction, like, okay, here are people volunteering, but like, I don't want to do that. It's not really my thing. There are barriers, maybe unexamined barriers like shame and avoidance of vulnerability. It's telling us that our kind of understanding of what's going on is on the right track, which is encouraging.
And also interesting to note, all goddamn day, like you said, you'll show up for other people, you'll put on a happy face for them, you'll feel total agony over the place that you're in just because you have to for them, but you don't deserve that. You don't deserve the sacrifice and the discomfort to try to make you feel better. You know what I mean? That's really interesting.
A very irreverent therapist that I trained under. And, you know, it would be like they do the classic, well, what would you tell your friend in this situation? Like, you better believe you would tell them that they need to get a buddy and call, you know? And then the person's like, yeah, I would tell my friend that, but like, I'm not going to do that. And this therapist would be like, well, what makes you so special?
Yeah. That's so funny. There's this very like, I know we're running a little over, but this you've activated us. You know, we're worried and we're all in our fucking feelings now. I am, whatever. But like... there's this like very like Facebook meme type like copypasta thing that Allie and I like quote at each other all the time, which was like that there's this like older couple, like an maybe elderly couple in the line at the grocery store, and that the wife like said something like, ugh, I can't eat that, I'm so fat, or something like that. So like, I'm so bad. And then that the husband grabbed her and was like, hey, don't talk to my best friend that way. So we like do it all the time when you're saying fucked up shit to yourself. You go to your friend, you're saying, hey, don't talk to my best friend that way. Oh, so silly, but so sweet. You know, hey, don't talk to my best friend. You know what I mean? We're bonded in this fucking pain. It just makes me sad. I'm sorry you're going through it. But I think, Dr. Nate, what you said is like really profound. Is like even in the predictable textbook patterns of like this negative quote unquote thing is like a lot of hope because that means it's identifiable and we can like find a way out.
It's not your identity, your personhood. That's not it. It is the depression box that you're living in. And the box looks similar for everyone, even though your experience in the box can be a little different, but that box is not you. You're in the box and you got to get the fuck out of the box.
Just put it on a t-shirt, dude. You know, get the fuck out of the box. That's it in a nutshell. All right. I don't know. We'll stop. I think we'll just call it for today. Thank you so much for being open with that and sharing that story. Like, I know it's hard to even write that fucking email. So, like, what are you saying, Doc?
I just said, please do follow up with us.
Yeah, please do. Let us know, you know, if you read where you reach out. I don't know. And again, Terry, Erica both offered. You can either message them privately, maybe, or if you just message me and I'll put you guys in touch. Like, please do. This is there's this whole thing of what's the word they use? It's not charity. It's like community action. What's the word they've been throwing around a lot? And mutual aid. Yeah, mutual aid.
Yeah. Look, man, in the Buddhist kind of philosophy, it's the Sangha. You know, it's the community. The community is one of the three pillars. You know, you got to have the community.
Yeah. I think one thing that's been amazing about this recent tough time, this strange coronavirus time, is that, like, a lot of the world told us that when things fell apart, it was going to be like this libertarian fantasy horror show. Everyone's trying to kill each other all the time and eat each other and blah, blah, blah. But in reality, it's much more like ANCOM. It's much more like people just like being cool and trying to help each other out, trying to keep the structures in place, politely waiting in line for the grocery store to not endanger people more than we have to. Like, it's amazing. And I've found, I think this is a virtual sort of community, but very real one, of this idea of like, it's not charity. We don't need big nonprofit charity organizations and things. We need those too, I guess. But like mutual aid, that like on a person to person basis, showing up for each other, it makes a huge fucking difference. And this little group, and you know, in the scheme of things, there's like dozens of us, not thousands, you know, that are this interconnected. But in a way, it makes it even more effective. Like, you'll find somebody here or nearby who will relate to what's going on, and I don't know, I think we can really like help each other out, you know what I mean? It only took one friend help, you know, like taking a moment to help me out, and that friend wouldn't have known and wouldn't have helped if I hadn't said something, if I hadn't, you know what I mean? All right, okay, I'm rambling. All right, thank you guys so much. Dr. Nick, thank you for being here again. This rocks. Please stay in touch, everybody. If anybody else is having these kinds of feelings, obviously all this stuff goes for you too. Very common. We're in it together. All right. I don't know how to wrap things up. We're just going to say we're done. Self-care. Drink a lot of water. Be hydrating. You know what I mean? All right. Be well. I love you guys. Thank you so much. Thanks, Dr. Nick. We'll see you guys. You check out mygoodbadbrain.com if you'd like some shirts, or patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain for more info. I'll put up Dr. Nick's resources. And quick little extra plug for today. At noon in 45 minutes, we switched the weekends of quarantine calisthenics into like self-care stuff, and I'm getting some guests to come on and things. I still got to have you come and do meditation. I forgot. But today, my acupuncturist, yesterday, my mom, who does a lot of yoga and stuff, did like some ankle and feet opening stuff. That was like amazing. And she's going to be back next week with wrists, but we're going to do some acupressure type. Gua Sha, I think is what it's called. It's like this kind of scraping. It's really great. It feels so good. I did an acupuncture session, quote unquote, virtually, where she was showing me some acupressure points and like showing me stuff I could do. And I was like, this is amazing. Would you like to do this for the group? So if you're interested in doing a little self-care physical practice that's kind of fun, come by at noon on Instagram Live today. And quarantine calisthenics continues. That's it. Okay, that's my little extra plug. All right, thank you guys. Thanks, Dr. Nick. We'll see you guys next week. I'll post this through the week. Are you good? All right, bye. All right. Thanks for joining us, guys. My Good Bad Brain is a production of Mind Jam Media. That's my little media company. Thanks to Coda for making this theme song with me. And that's it. MyGoodBadBrain.com. Patreon.com/MyGoodBadBrain. You're the best. Have a good one. Self-care. Hydrate. Be well.